So our topic is Tochin Part 2, specifically the Gezeira regarding medicine, and we're going to rifle through this. I was asked to cover a breadth of topics, and so I'm going to go through as quickly as I can and ask that we hold the questions to the end. Unless there's something that's just budget not clear, but if it's like, what about, whatever, then hold it to the end. So, I brought you the Rambam in the first source on the sheet, where he records the Gezeira that we are familiar with, where he says in the last words of that halacha, in Halacha Shabbos Chaf Aleph Chaf, Asur Labari Lihisrapos B'Shabbos Gezeira Shema Yishtok Samamanim, a healthy person is not allowed to become healed on Shabbos, out of concern lest he grind something up. And right away in the Rambam you see that word, right? A healthy person. Okay, healthy people are not allowed to heal themselves on Shabbos, and you know that that introduces us to the issue of shlikas, the different categories of chola. Noting that different things will be permitted for different for people at different stages of illness. I gave a shiur on dental emergencies on Shabbos a few years ago. That's on YU Torah. If anyone wants more information and more background, I gave considerably more background there. The worst category of chola, the one who you really don't want to encounter, is the chola sheyesh bo sakana, someone who is dangerously ill. This means danger and even possible danger to life. So what is it that we are allowed to do for this person? So the sources here, I left the English translation from when I did them on the source sheet for that year, so people can see it that way as well. But the Shulchan Aruch writes, whatever would be done during the week, right? We do for him all that we would normally do during the week. So if today were Tuesday, how would I treat him? That's what I do now. Not only that, it's not only direct treatment for the thing that's wrong, but also whatever's needed to strengthen his health to give him an improved chance for recovery. So Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avram, in source number 2, it talks about giving somebody a pain pill or something like that, and he says it's not going to endanger the patient not to have it. Nonetheless, he needs this. We would do it for him during the week, and therefore, you're allowed to do it for him on Shabbos as well. And so Rav Neuver in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa in source 3 gives you an example. He says, Mutar l'chol sheyesh bo sakana lishtamesh betrufos gam im einon hechrechios latzal samei hasakana. Just what we said. You can use medicine for things that aren't about the danger at all. Kegon kadur lahargahat keva b'am nashinayim. He has a toothache. Right? So somebody's in the hospital, and he's suffering from, I don't know, stage 4 cancer and having a terrible, he needs his chemotherapy treatment, whatever, and we're also going to give him a pill for his toothache. As part of this, that's included. Now, normally we assume that this kind of danger that we're talking about is a physical danger, a physical threat. However, I did see this one source that I thought was worth noting here, and I brought it on the sheet in source 4 from the Nishma Shabbos, quoting the Melachim Omnayach. Melachim Omnayach is, of course, from Zilberstein. I say, of course, because read the line. He says, when the pain is especially strong and unbearable, shakev mazim biyoser ubiltinis balim him karov lepikuach nefesh shadam alul aredes midaito kshenifskaf bekevim azim. He says people can lose their mind when they suffer from extreme pain, and therefore extreme pain could also be considered pikuach nefesh. I think this is a really important point because it changes the way we look at defining illness. In the dentist shear, I noted there is something known as the trigeminal nerve, which runs by the jaw, and it's supposed to be the worst of the worst when someone has a problem with that nerve. I know someone in the city who has it, or had it, I hope. I knew someone in Allentown who had it, and it's awful, awful pain, and I wonder about being able to claim, that this is like pikuach nefesh, to be able to take care of this on Shabbos. I mean, you don't need to violate a deraisa to take care of that. There are ways to deal with it. But what else is included? So, infection. If the infection might get worse, then we also say that that is considered to be pikuach nefesh. The Mishnah Berurah I brought you on the sheet. Sorry, no, the Shulchan Aruch I brought you on the sheet in number 7. But the
Mishnah Berurah 5.
About the Mishnah Berurah 5. Okay. So an infection which might get worse counts. Internal injuries count as well. This is what we call in the Gemara and Shabbos a makash shel halal, an internal wound. And the Gemara in Shabbos says the back of one's hand, the back of one's foot, also are considered to be like a makah shel chalal, an internal injury. Makah shel chalal does not mean chalal as a corpse. Rashi in Avodah Zarah Chavches explains it means chalal as the hollow spaces inside the body. Where does internal begin? This was a big question for the dentists. What constitutes internal? Right? What about something in the teeth? So in fact, the Shulchan Aruch, it begins at the teeth and gums. Right. From the teeth and inward, and the teeth count. You'd violate Shabbos for it, and then the Ramah says, but you're not going to be able to tell a Jew to pull someone's tooth on Shabbos, despite the fact that we just seems to have said that it begins with them. This is all that identification of the teeth and gums is based on the Gemara in Yuma, Peidal, and Abad Aleph regarding a condition called Safidna, that apparently involved the teeth as well as the bowels, leading to some very interesting diagnostics by the dentists who were present for that shiur, trying to figure out what exactly that might be parallel to. But in any case, the rule is anything internal counts, and the reason, as the Mishnah Berurah writes in 9, any internal wound, he says, Oshar choli sheyesh bo sakana, or any other dangerous illness. I really should have written other in the translation, like a burning fever, he says. So in other words, the Mishnah Berurah says, simply because we consider this to be very dangerous when something is inside. However, this is only where it's not general pain, but there's a particular wound, injury, something going on inside. That's the way that the Shulchan Aruch positions it in Shin Chav Ches Gimel. And only if it's not known to be safe. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah writes in Source 10. If the doctors know exactly what this is, and they know that the person has to have treatment X and it doesn't require Chilul Shabbos Del Reisa, you don't view this as a Pikuach Nefesh case on Shabbos. Makah shel chalal is default, but it isn't automatically, well, it's internal, you know, that's it, that's what you ought to do. So our pikuach nefesh, chol sheyesh bo sakana case, is danger and even possible danger to life. It allows you to do whatever would be done for this person during the week, and whatever is necessary to strengthen the person's health, even if it's not a pikuach nefesh type of a treatment. We said that this may include extreme pain. It may include, well, it definitely includes infection that might get worse and might not. And it includes internal injury if it's coming from a particular disease or wound, as opposed to general pain. And and the doctors don't know that this person is safe. I had a very interesting application question that I was asked, and I went back to Rav Schechter with it through Shai. What if the patient has a tooth that shows signs of deep and immediate infection? Okay, deep and immediate infection, so we are concerned. But you have two options for treatment. Option A is to drill into the gum, remove the infected pulp, and drain any infected fluid. That's one thing you can do. So you're drilling in, it's extra malacha, right? Or you can pull the tooth and just start antibiotics, which involves less malacha. So either approach might be used on a weekday. Dentists and Stam may use one or the other. Patients tend to prefer approach A because it enables them to keep their natural teeth. You know, you drill into the gum, you take out the pulp, but the tooth will hopefully survive the operation. However, that involves more malachos. Does the surgeon have the option of using approach A because that's what patients prefer, knowing that it will involve more malacha on Shabbos? So Shef's answer was yes. He could do A. He could. He said, first of all, none of the malachos involved sound like a del reisa to him. And he knew we were talking about an electric drill. He said, none of the malachas involve count as a de'oraisa, and you do kol tzrachav, and this accounts as kol tzrachav. Well, that was very interesting. Okay.
And an x-ray problem.
Sorry?
Would you need an x-ray to know exactly what the nature of the problem is?
X-rays are their own shear. I also did one a shear on that. You can look on Y Utah. I did on x-rays. There's a whole other discussion. Keep your x-ray machine on from before Shabbos. That's what you want to do. When I said no questions, though, I was serious. Unless it's not, clear about what I said?
Sort of.
Okay, then go ahead.
No, but you said there's no issue to arise from Shabbos. What about taking the infection part out? Isn't that for rare?
Would it taking the infected part out be bo rare? Well, if nothing else, the samach lachilas. Yeah, I don't know. Let me think about that. Let me think about it. You take it out with a little bit of the rest. You take it out with a little bit of the rest. It's not mappis morsa, no, because you're not creating a hole in something that will allow things to go in and out. The next category is sakanas aver, danger to a limb. It's not clear why danger to a limb is different from general illness. The Pinei Halacha says that it's because it could lead to danger to the body as a whole. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that some permit violating a derabanan for this. It's in source 11, the part that I underlined, right? So some permit direct violation if an aver is endangered, and violation in an altered way with a shino if no aver is endangered. The Mishnah Berurah says that's the view that the Shulchan Aruch is adopting here. So how do you define aver? That's really hard. The Shevet Halevi takes a hardcore definition of aver. He says the Mishnah in Ahalos lists for you 248 body parts that qualify as avarim, and that's what Sakanas aver is about. So for example, your metatarsal on your toe, well, that's one of the ones that lists that it lists when it counts up the 248. So therefore, that's going to count as Sakanas aver. The other view, though, that I think I've seen more, the Ketos HaShulchan, Rav Neuben Shmir Shabbat Kelechasa, the Nishmas Avram, they say it's any functional unit of the body. Any unit of the body that cannot do its job is considered to be in Sakanas Aver. And so I brought you Rav Neuben cited in the Nishmas Avram, taking this position in number 12, if it's going to cease to function. Not only that, though, this is even stronger, and this is where you get to the Hebrew sources, Aleph and Beis, that are after 12, per the Bani HaShulchan, on the Ketos HaShulchan, and the Nishmas Avram, quoting with Neuvert, even it could be treated at a later date. That's still Sakanas Aver. So they talk about it in terms of fertility treatments. This is what I mentioned to you when we were talking the other day. The fertility treatments, because right now she's not ovulating properly, that's Sakanas Aver. Even though you could take the same thing, you know, just off cycle or whatever, and now it would work. Nonetheless, there's a lot of interesting discussion surrounding teeth. And here I ask Rav Shechter again, does a tooth count as Sakanas Aver? So Rabbi Tandler and Dr. Rosner wrote an article in which they said yes, because the jaw won't function normally if it's missing a tooth. The Shevet Halevi argues it's not Sakanas Aver for a tooth, because it says a tooth is not an Aver Adam, as seen in laws regarding Tumah. He's again very, you know, this is what an Aver is. The Netziv and the Merome Sadeh says, come on, toughen up, you can chew without one of your teeth. They deal with it. And Rav Shechter says false teeth are a very good option. So basically, you have Rabbi Tandler and Dr. Rosner saying it's Sakanas Aver because the jaw won't function normally, but everybody else I could find who discussed this issue said, no, a tooth does not count as Sakanas Aver. Obviously, a baby tooth certainly does not count as Sakanas Aver. Okay. Chola she'ein bo sakana. What about somebody who has no danger to life but is very ill? So the Shulchan Aruch defines it. You see it there in Shin Chav Ches Yid Zayin. There, we saw it earlier, actually. It's further up the page. But that's somebody who has fallen into bed from illness, according to the Mechaber, or the Ramah says, chola kogufo, his entire body is ill. So the Shulchan Aruch brings multiple views. And then per the Mishnah Berurah, we adopt the view that says, you do a derabanan with a shinui, as discussed above. But the Mishnah Berurah says, if need be, you could do a derabanan without a shinui as well. Or you could have a non-Jew do a de'oraisa. So examples of what qualifies for this category, the Aruch HaShulchan says, fever that would normally render somebody homebound. That's in source number 17. Fever that would render somebody homebound counts as this. The Nishmas Avram quotes Rosh Shlomo Zalman to say that somebody who can walk but will be bedridden later without treatment, so someone who's developing a migraine, he says, as an example, qualifies as Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. Children automatically qualify for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, but there's a machlokas as to how you define child. I brought you the different shitas in source number 19. The first view is, the youngest view, so to speak, says it's the age when they're still eating baby food. Then the next view up says it's 2 or 3 years old. The next view up says you compare it to the Gemara about the child who's locked in the room and needs his mother, and you break down the door, and that's up to age 6. Says the Tzitz Eliezer, quoting the Moruk Tzia. And then finally, the Minchas Yitzchak, quoting the Yisir V'Heter, says it's just like Bikuach Nefesh on Yom Kippur, where we say we don't want kids fasting up until the age of 10. We don't want them doing that. He says, yeah, until the age of 9, basically. And Shmir Shabbos Kehochasa says 9 or 10 still counts as a child for the child to be able to take medication and automatically be considered Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, no further questions. Okay. Then the last category is mechush ba'alma, somebody who has non-dangerous, non-debilitating pain. They're just, you know, they're not comfortable. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if it's not the whole body and it doesn't render him bedridden. The Aruch HaShulchan says a light headache or a bellyache. The Nishmas Avram says a cough. So what are you able to do? So you have to keep in mind the Gemara in Ksuvos Daf Samach, which says that the Rabbanans were not created for cases where they are going to cause pain. Right? The Gemara in Ksuvos says that our assumption is that the Rabbanan was not created to cause pain. However, as the Nishmas Avram notes, that's only where the initial Gezerah included did not include the possibility of pain. In other words, the whole Gezerah here was don't take medication. Obviously you're talking about somebody who's going to be in pain because he can't take medication. So therefore the klal from Ksuvos does not apply, says the Nishmas Avram, quoting Shmir Shabbos Gehilchasa, quoting Rishon Zaman Orbach. He says no. It's like Tanis Tzibur, right? Someone can't say, well, I shouldn't observe this Tanis Derabanan because I'm hungry. No, that's not the way it works. So the only thing that we can do for the person with Mechush is to say a non-Jew could perform a Derabanan for you. I don't know what that looks like in terms of taking pills. Okay, but that's just introduction, layers of machla, and that already took half of our time. So, what happens to this gezerah today when we don't grind things anyway? So, a few interesting points. Number one is Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger has this very funny idea in the Sefer HaChaim, and I brought it for you on the sheet in Source Aleph. He says, you know, the gezerah, the concern that we have is that you might come to grind something, right? That's your concern. But what if the medication requires more than just grinding in order to prepare it? What if the medication requires bishul as well? Right? This is Source Aleph that is found after the English stuff. He says, even if you're going to insist that where he started his medication before Shabbos, which we're going to discuss separately, that you can't take medication on Shabbos, he says the prohibition will be specifically if it's a non-cooked medication. Just that it's mixed up and you eat and drink it. He says there's the concern that if you don't allow him to do this, that he will come to grind. But if it requires cooking, who's cooked already before Shabbos, you'd be allowed to take it on Shabbos, because he says, he says, you're not worried about grinding it up, because you would still have to cook. And after the bishul, he says, there's nothing else to do. And if you're going to tell me he's going to grind, what for? He would still have to do bishul. And he says, I'm not concerned that you're going to do bishul on Shabbos. He says, You've never heard of such a thing that in Yisr Chomer like bishul, someone's going to do it. Yeah, maybe Shrika Saman, and maybe they would do. They don't understand. But bishul, no way. So it's a fascinating kula. If you know that your medicine is processed via cooking, then apparently it's not a problem. And I've seen this invoked as a snif lahakel. The Ksos HaShulchan was willing to invoke this as a snif lahakel. The major approach that people want to bring is to say, what are you talking about today? Nobody grinds things up anyway. That's not an issue. The Tzitz Eliezer, which I brought you a piece of here in Bayes, notes this, but he distinguishes between two potential arguments. He says, the Taz explains the view of the Rambam, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, not to treat via a method... Sorry, say it slower. We are going to see that the Rambam, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch say that if there is a type of treatment which doesn't involve grinding up ingredients ever, then you would be allowed to do this on Shabbos, right? The only problem is if it's the type of treatment that in some cases will involve grinding. So he says, today, nobody treats our illnesses by grinding up materials. They did it in a factory somewhere, right? I just heard before the shiur that in pharmacies themselves, it's rare to grind, but certainly no one at home is doing grinding. And again, cutting up a pill is not going to be a problem of grinding, because it could be tochein achar tochein. There's no such thing as repeat tochein. So, and even if someone somewhere is able to grind, we should follow Ruba D'Alma. We should do what most people do. And that's what Tzitz Eliezer presents the argument. He quotes the Kiryas Melech Rav on the Rambam Hilchos Shabbos Beis Yud. And he supports it with all sorts of other cases that we are familiar with where gezeiros don't apply because our situation was never within the gezeira in the first place, right? The discussion about musical instruments and clapping on Shabbos, where Tosfos says that that clapping is fine. The no debi Yehuda regarding swimming and making a raft where nobody makes rafts. The issue of the rush on sudden betzitzis, having linen strings on a linen garment for tzitzis, right? Because there's no chashash that someone's going to use tchelis because we don't have tchelis, says the rush. It comes up in Giloy, it comes up in Achstomis. So that's the argument that the Tzitzel Yazir says may make a lot of sense. The Ksos HaShulchan deals with this as well. In the Bari HaShulchan, it's in Kuf Lamed Daled. The Olaz Noach Gimel as well. They deal with this as well. But they take a different view. They take a second approach. Their approach is that the reason for the gezeira, for the their approach is that the reason for the gezeira no longer applies. The Tzitzel Eliezer's approach was a different one. The Tzitzel Eliezer's approach was to say we were never the situation that the gezeira was under. Just like the gezeira doesn't apply to exercise, let's say, because exercise doesn't involve grinding things up, even though it's therapeutic. That's not under the gezeira. So too, medicine, bizman hazeh, should not be under the gezeira. Their argument is the whole gezeira is batel, because we don't grind things up. However, the Tzitzel Eliezer then comes back and says, the truth of the matter is, this whole thing doesn't work. Because the homeopaths. The homeopaths ruined it for everybody. Because they still grind things up to make home remedies, and therefore the gezeira will still apply. Sorry, I'm not going there. But that's his argument. He also notes medicines are made out of powder. Powder gets mixed with water. That could be a lush problem. And so Tzitzel Eliezer backs down. There's also a piece in the Chavah Nachalaso Yud Aleph Yud that I didn't get a chance to look at before the shir. I have it in my notes from the last time I spoke about this topic that I didn't get to look at it then either. There's also a piece from the Ner Gavriel on this topic. But fundamentally, I think the reason why the Gezeira is not lifted is because we have so many ways to treat people at any level of need. Meaning, barring the person who... Sorry? That's right. Is there a piece also in... Pnei Arav, I think. Yeah. Rav Shechter also apparently has a piece as well. I think fundamentally, though, because for anything but a mild headache, we're able to treat people anyway. And not only that, we have the heter of ongoing treatments that we're about to talk about as well. It becomes like... Why would you want to stick your neck out and say a gezeira was changed, which can bring, you know, the wrath of everybody down on your head, when we're fine anyway? We have easier heterim. I think that's really why this has never been discussed as something to undo. Okay, more. Ongoing treatments. This is a very, very funny topic. The ongoing treatments. Everybody knows that if you started your treatment before Shabbos, you're taking a course of antibiotics for 7 days or whatever it is, you're allowed to keep on going. But nobody knows why. So Shlomo Kluger in the Sefer HaChaim, which is source Gimel here under Tipul Nimsheches, or Tipul Nimshechet, says if you started, you're allowed to continue. Why? Because we make a distinction in Halacha between a bandage, attaching a bandage on Shabbos for the first time, and replacing a bandage that was already in place before. The Tosfos and the Magen Avraham say you're not allowed to put it in place initially because we're worried you might grind up the ingredients for the plaster to go on the bandage. But putting it back is no concern because you already made it the first time. You already made the plaster. That's when you put the bandage on in the first place. So Shlomo Kluger says it's similar with medicine, which has no concern for Meruach, the whole other issue of bandages. Right? That's a separate concern with bandages, is the problem of Meruach of smearing. But that doesn't apply for medicine in general. So if I already started before Shabbos, that means I ground up whatever I needed to grind up. That's for Shlomo Kluger's justification. What if you were reapplying what?
Your
shmir
under the bandage.
So Meruach is a separate concern.
Doesn't apply to us.
Meruach will be a separate concern in the bandage case. That's true. The Mishnah Brura in Shin Chav Ches Pei Vav says a different point of view, which may apply to some medications and not to others. He says, you know why you're allowed to put a bandage on the second time? Because you're no longer bahul. You're no longer all upset and frantic. The initial treatment is like, oh no, I need to get this in, and therefore I might come to do something wrong. But if you already had the initial treatment, you're no longer as upset and whatever, and therefore there's no concern of coming to grind something up. So you could apply that regarding treatments that, you know, are just finishing up the course of medication, potentially.
That there's no chashash.
Correct. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa has the Mekilim as well, and he quotes Shlomo Zalman with a third approach. Shlomo Zalman says the only time you're allowed to continue an ongoing course of medication is if halting would cause harm, or the cure requires that it go through a Shabbos, like it's a more than 7 day treat, 7 days or more for the treatment. So in those cases, that's what he says, you would be allowed to continue it. And then you have Ramosha. And Ramosha says the concern is a nervous breakdown. That's Ramosha's explanation. He says, you tell people that they can't take their medicine on Shabbos, they might have a nervous breakdown, and therefore you let them continue the ongoing treatment. Sorry?
No, you have a keen awareness of like mental health.
Oh, very much so.
And other issues as well.
Yes. So you have four different explanations, but fundamentally we do justify continuing an ongoing course of medication. There are nachaminas between some of these positions. What about therapies that are medicine? We already talked about this marginally, but are nowhere near grinding. They're not about grinding. So Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to do a massage to make somebody sweat. Right? This is now, if you're following on the sheet, it's source Ches. Ein mis'amlin. He says, you're not allowed to be mit'amel. Mit'amel in modern Hebrew is exercise. Or, if you believe those who write on Rav Kook, it's a military exercise. That's a long discussion. But he says, you're not allowed to do this. But he explains what he means by mit'amel. Hainu shedores al haguf b'chawach k'dei sheyigav v'yazia. Meaning to trample the body with strength in order to make the person sweat. To exhaust the person and makes the person sweat. No doing that. So the Mishnah Berurah asks, what's wrong with causing sweat? We also say in the very next halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to do cupping on Shabbos. So he says it's not that. It's that sometimes people use ground up ingredients in order to induce sweat. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says the concern is. He also speaks about therapeutic massage in order to restore strength. And he says it's not clear if that's like refuah or not, but he says, based on the Magen Avraham, that strengthening one's constitution is prohibited, and that applies here as well. He doesn't want things that are fundamentally therapeutic, even though, you know, again, I would look at it and say, we don't use it, we don't grind up ingredients with it, but the Mishnah Berurah apparently thinks that sometimes they do. At the same time, in Mem Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch says that if it's done with ingredients that one if you don't use ground up ingredients with this type of therapy, and the person is in pain, you're allowed to use it. So example of that is brought in the Mishnah Berurah, putting metal on one's eye to prevent spread of inflammation. Right? Whether it's happening because of the pressure or because it's cooling it is unclear to me. But that's what you would do. That's an example of this. It's not done with grinding things. And that's why we apply the head there. Vitamins. What about vitamins? So Ramosha says, vitamins give a little bit of strength, like what you get from eating meat as opposed to eating vegetables, he says. He says, vitamins give a little bit of strength. You're allowed to take it on Shabbos, even if it's meant to prevent you from getting ill easily. It's like food. That's the way he looks at it. Whereas, if it's to cure a disease, then he says, you wouldn't be allowed to take the vitamin unless you were at a level where you're allowed to already take medication. A naturally weak person who is healthy and takes it to become stronger, he says that will be taller. There's a machlokas between the Bach, the Magen Avraham, and he says you should be strict and not have the person take it. So the vitamins, Ramosha likes the idea of viewing them as food, with a caution that not where it's to cure a disease, or to do something that looks like what medicine does. The Nishmas Avraham quotes a Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, who says if a person is ill, he could take it anyway. The person's ill, he can take it anyway. If he's healthy, then he says you may not take it. And even if it's a daily dose. But if it's something that everybody takes daily, then it's like food. So if I...
there's three levels, seemingly.
Yes, that is correct. It has to be either like food, or it has to be curing somebody of a disease which warrants medication. But in order for it to be like food, he says it has to be something that healthy people eat where you live. So an example of that, I think, might be vitamin D pills in Toronto. Right? Every doctor I've talked to says you should be taking vitamin D during the winter. I don't know if natives get the same speech. But that would be... Sorry?
I'm a native and I didn't get that speech.
Okay, well, you should know. Take vitamin D. You look like you could use it.
You say natives, you mean us or you mean...
Next.
What's chaser onim?
So that's the next category. The chaser onim is erectile dysfunction. And the question comes up, what about taking such pills on Shabbos? Either the case in which somebody would be damaged by Tashmish Hamita, there's concern about his health, keeping his health, or the case in which somebody is incapable but with medication is able to do it. So in terms of the case of somebody who needs treatment before sexual relations because it's not safe for him, the Menachas Yitzchak permits that. He compares it to the case of putting a machitza in front of a flame so that it'll be dark in the room to enable tashmish hamita.
Nitroglycerin one.
Right. Yeah. But in terms of the issue of erectile dysfunction, Viagra, whatever it is, so, and this is fascinating, Nishmas Avram, again, quotes Sakanas Eber. It's non-function of a bodily organ. And on that basis, he says one would be allowed to take this medication. And he quotes Rav Eliashiv, who says presumably this person took it also at some point during the week. And therefore it counts as a continued treatment. Plus he also adds in Shlomo Kluger about cooked products. So he throws in the sniff lahakel of cooked products, along with taking it at some point during the week makes this an ongoing treatment, even though it's not like take it every day for X number of days. And he adds in the fact that the idea of sakanas eiver, all in order to come up with
how
this.
How does the cooked product?
I'll tell you what, you weren't here when I said in the beginning. I'm holding all the questions to the end. I have one more category left. If you have to go, go. But I just need another 2 minutes or 3 minutes. The issue of Yom Tov. How do I view medication on Yom Tov? So it would seem the Gezerah should be irrelevant for Yom Tov, right? It would seem that the whole Gezerah doesn't apply on Yom Tov because you're allowed to I brought you Hilchos Yom Tov, Gimel Yud Beis, right? Where did I do it? In source number one, where the Rambam says, if you wouldn't be able to grind these up on Erev Yom Tov, then you're allowed to grind them on Yom Tov. So what's the issue here? So some poskim did in fact say the whole gezeirah is irrelevant on Yom Tov, and you're allowed to take medicine on Yom Tov. The Ritva quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes is one example that I brought you here in source three. It shouldn't apply for Yom Tov at all. Rav Shlomo Kluger brings it. The Maram Hurwitz on Shabbos Kuflam Adalah brings it as well in source 4. It seems like you should be able to take it on Yom Tov. The only problem is that you have an explicit Gemara in Beitzach of Beis Amud Beis, which seems to say that you're not allowed to do this on Yom Tov. Go back to source number 2, right? A Maimar permitted treating an eye on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Right? That implies that, as a general rule, we don't allow treatment on Yom Tov. Shani may be different, we'll have to see. But the rule seems to be we don't allow it. Similarly, source 5 talks about taking certain medications on Chol HaMoed, implying Yom Tov, you shouldn't have done so. You take it on Chol HaMoed. So there are two approaches. One approach is to say that the kind of grinding that is prohibited would be prohibited even in a case of food. For various reasons. One reason being, the Magen Mishnah's point, is he says that grinding is only mutter on Yom Tov because it isn't for the sake of this product. It's for the sake of making the product usable with something else. It's a step. Not completion of the thing. I find that a difficult idea to understand. I mean, the Ritva is a lot simpler. The Ritva says it's because your benefit might not be achieved that day. Why am I allowed to grind up ingredients for my food on Yom Tov? For Simchas Yom Tov. But I take the medicine today, I might not get better for 3 days. So that's the Ritva's argument. That's one. Number two, the second reason that's offered for why you're not supposed to take medicine on Yom Tov is not about Shrika Samamanim at all. Rather, it's that we are worried about the effect of treatment on your joy of Yom Tov. Taking the medication, taking the therapy might ruin your joy of Yom Tov. Mezivalin, for example, you know why it's called Mezivalin. Mezivalin, it's an emetic. That's not the right word. Diuretic. It's a diuretic. It's meant to cause zevel. We don't want you taking it on Yom Tov, having nothing to do with Shrika Samanim. It's not about that. It's about reducing your joy of Yom Tov.
The lack of being able is creating a.
So that would be the question the other way, and maybe there would be a justification with enough pain you call them chalishim basakana. But to apply this to Yom Tov Rishon, because of the machlokas about this gezerah, where some say the gezerah doesn't apply in Yom Tov and some say it does, we have a split among the poskim. Rav Shlomo Kluger is on the side of leniency, but he vacillates. The Tzitz Eliezer is lenient, and he says if you started before Yom Tov, then he's certainly good with you continuing it, because he says, number one, that increases the odds that it's going to work that day, and it doesn't have an effect that's going to damage Yom Tov. The Nishmas Avram quotes Rav Elyashiv, who said that pills are okay for someone who is suffering based on the position of the Maram Hurwitz, who we saw above. There are lenient voices. On the other hand, the Mishnah Berurah was strict. Mishnah Berurah said, no, the Gzeres Shlichas Samanim applies on Yom Tov as well. The Chai Adam did as well. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch did as well. Rabbi Dr. Steinberg, in an article in Asya, says that Tzitz Eliezer did not see the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and the Chai Adam that would have led to those prohibitions, and that's why he was lenient, otherwise he would not have been so lenient. Knowing that you had all of these Achroni Achronim who were not happy that Tzitz Eliezer probably would have changed his mind. I don't know what his basis is for saying that Tzitz Eliezer I never saw this in the Chai Adam because the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. The Tzitz Eliezer had access. I don't know, but I don't know why the Tzitz Eliezer would not have seen it. That's what I don't understand. But in terms of Yom Tov Sheni, which is itself a Dirabbanan, so we tend to permit even in a case of even mild need. We'll say it's okay. The Shemir Shabbos Kehilchasa quotes the Mishnah Berurah to say that you would be allowed to on Yom Tov Sheni other than Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah, because Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah is Yom Arichta, it's considered one long day, so that's a different story. But otherwise, taking medicine is fine on Yom Tov Sheni, even for light pain, even if you will say that such a Gezeira Shrika Samanim exists. So that's, again, that was just like a really too fast march through the issues. And now, those who have questions, I will be glad to turn off the recorder and take it. Go ahead.